welcome to another show of Atlanta Sales Talk Radio, and we have a phenomenal show for you again. I think that's probably the fifth time I've actually said that this is going to be a phenomenal show of the last five shows, so I have to come up with a new word, I think, Andy, huh?
No, I think we just keep delivering on phenomenal shows.
All right. Well,
it's not a problem if it's always true, right?
That's good. And I have my guest host, Mr. Andy Lowe. Andy, how are you?
I am doing well. I'm all warmed up for color commentary today, so let me know when you need me.
Good, absolutely. Well, you're looking pretty fit these days. How's your Ironman training going?
Well, you know, it's just a half iron this year at the end of the year. We'll get back to the full course next year, but it's going well. You know, pool swim today, which is probably the most mentally challenging because it's just boring, man. Lap after lap, you're following a black line on the bottom. But I'm interested in your fitness story. So have you managed to run down a number for the peach tree yet or not?
I have not. I have not run down the peach tree. I think I'm going to pass on that because I was told that, my anniversary is the 2nd, and apparently I'm going out of town.
Oh, well, there you go.
So I don't think I'm going to be here for the peach tree, which works out because I wasn't able to get a number, and I wasn't going to pay a premium for one. Does that sound cheap? I don't know. It does. All right, so I have a show. We have some wonderful guests here today. We have Mr. Chris Combs, Chief Operating Officer from SAIT, and Chris and I go way back, so hopefully we'll not tell any war stories or speak out of school here. And then we have Miss Ann Stevens, from the CEO of SAIT, and we'll be hearing from her momentarily. And then, of course, last but not least, is a good friend of mine from way back, Mr. Steve Gilkinson. Or should it be Steven here?
Steven's fine. Steve or Steven.
All right. Well, we'll go with Steven. That's why we don't have any confusion, because I'm Steve.
Okay.
All right.
And we have Ann Stevens over here, we're going to have lots of confusion.
So we'll go with first names. I think we're going to keep it all sane here, right? Relatively good. So with all that said, we have our wonderful guests. We'll be talking about different perspectives of the show here. Again, Atlanta Sales Talk Radio, we talk about sales, all things sales, what's their experiences. So everyone has a fresh perspective on sales, and that's what we're going to be digging into today. And one of the things I always like to say is, everybody's in sales, and that's kind of the theme as we go into this. So, but without much further ado, I think I'll start with SAIT, and I think it's only right that we start ladies first, and also the CEO of SAIT. And would you share a little bit about yourself and SAIT?
Yes, SAIT is a firm that's been in Atlanta, actually established about 20 years ago. So it's not a new firm, and if you look at what's happened, it's in information technology, and you think of what's happened in information technology as a field in 20 years, it's pretty unbelievable. For those of us that may have had a brick cell phone back 20 years ago,
yes,
and think about what we have today and what we carry along, technology has changed so much. And what our firm does is provides just about any type of service that you can imagine that's associated with information technology. So we offer managed services, professional services, software as a service, infrastructure as a service. Plus, we have some really new and exciting business ventures that I think we're going to talk a little bit about with Chris.
Outstanding. Wonderful. I'm excited about that. And then now, Chris, you're Chief Operating Officer for SAIT.
Yeah, it was actually kind of interesting. I met Ann because of one of the ventures we're about to talk about, and we got working on that. And about November last year, she said, "Hey, I need to make a change in the company. I need to look for a new chief operating officer. Would you mind doing the job?" And so I worked with Ann enough and respected her enough and said, "Yeah, I'll take it on." And for about 2 months after that, I walked in every day and asked her if it was too late to say no. And
I said yes. It's too late to say no.
Absolutely. But you also have, if I'm not mistaken, you know, you're one of those that has, you know, you believe in that 4-hour work week, if I'm not mistaken. You know, anything more than 4 hours, you don't like to really stretch yourself. Of course, I'm being facetious. So you have two roles, I think, right?
I'm acting as the Chief Operating Officer for SAIT, but I'm also the CEO of a company called CoreGuard, which is a partner of SAIT and was the company that, you know, originally brought Ann and I together.
Mm-hmm. And can you share a little bit about CoreGuard?
CoreGuard is an information security company. We've created a new product called WinTalker, which is a new way of securing information. We actually secure information in the data itself at the sub-document, sub-data level, so that the information security is built into the data, goes with the data no matter where the data goes. So we can actually span the entire framework of the digital map right now. So everybody right now is moving from desktop to cloud to mobility, but there is not right now a single information security system out there that will span that whole topography. WinTalker actually will span that whole topography and give you a single way of securing your information across the network, across the internet.
Isn't that like a VPN? I mean, you're kind of...
No, actually, with WinTalker, you don't need a VPN because the information security is built into the data. So where a VPN is actually kind of just securing the pipe, WinTalker secures the information the whole time. So a secure pipe, though you may want to do it, is a redundancy.
Good. So you're like, so you, even if I crack the safe, so to speak, of a data center or get into that data is useless to me.
Right.
Good.
Yeah. All right. We actually kind of look at it as how you, right now, the paradigm is how you defend your home is how we defend our network. So you put a fence around your house, you put a dog in the yard and burglar alarm, nice fancy lock. But if the burglar hops the fence, throws a stake to the dog, picks the lock, bypasses your burglar alarm, and they're out the back with your jewelry's gone, and there's really not a lot you can do about it. It's the same thing with our networks, right? We put up firewalls, we do intrusion detection, we try to make it so that the people can't get into our networks. But once they get into our networks and we steal the information, the information's gone and there's nothing you can do about it.
Sure.
With WinTalker, because the information security is with the data itself, you don't, you know, if somebody breaks into your system and steals your data, you haven't lost anything.
Interesting. So it's really, this sounds like almost like a paradigm shift in the security industry.
Yeah, it really is. But what's more important, that though it's an information security solution and we create what we call self-protecting data, what's more important, what that allows us to do. So it allows us to actually openly share information. So right now with information sharing, you have rules and boundaries, secure devices, things like SharePoint, which are all about rules.
Right.
With WinTalker, we can openly share the information and still yet be secure without having to rely on all those rules and all the systems that actually inhibit sharing.
Good. Okay. I got it. And I think we'll talk about that as how you sell that.
Well, let me confuse it a little bit.
Sure.
We use the words data, and people would think of words in a database or numbers in a database. You could also do it with chat. So, in effect, if we were talking some very confidential information here, and part of this conversation could only be heard by certain viewers, we could secure this data voice in chat.
Interesting. So you could actually secure chat language.
Sure. Or think of movies. Think of movies. What we can do with WinTalker is take one set of data in a movie and actually code it so different viewers, you know, general audience versus 13, you know, versus X-rated, within the same film, you could digitally secure different levels so that if it were children watching it, they would see a G-rated film versus if it was were teenagers watching it, they could see a bit more pieces in the film that were there. So it's a lot of applications, even beyond, you know, securing data, words, and numbers.
Interesting.
Yeah. We have actually something we call what we call the WinTalker moment. It's when you really start grasping the technology and understanding what the technology allows you to do outside of just information security. People start, you know, having what we then call the yes conversation, because they go, can it do this? And we say, yes. Can it do this? We say, yes. And so it starts the mind thinking about all the different things you can do with this technology because of how it works.
Interesting. Good. All right. I want to come back to that because I think there's some real synergies around this. And of course, Mr. Gilkinson, if you would introduce yourself.
I'm just fascinated by what Chris and Ann are sharing here, so I'm not so sure how much I've got to chime in, but I do have some questions for them along the way. My business, Savant Group, we are executive search consultants. I work primarily with companies in the telecommunications and IT services space, helping them identify and retain senior leadership, as well as individual contributors in sales and client management type roles.
And I think you're also being humble because also you are a LinkedIn guru, right? You have a LinkedIn group you have that is pretty influential in the world today.
I'm the founder of a couple of LinkedIn groups, Sales 2.0 Best Practices, as well as the Association of Sales Professionals. Each of those groups are probably 6,000 or 7,000 members. I also have probably about 4,500 direct connections myself on LinkedIn. I was an early adopter of social media. I think I was probably member 400,000 or something like that in LinkedIn, and they've got, you know, who knows how many.
I think 80 million is the number that they're using right now, but yeah, that's pretty good. 400,000, I was up, I think I'm 1.1 of those adopters.
Yeah, yeah, that's pretty early, actually.
Yeah.
But you didn't get a letter from the CEO when they sent out those nice letters to their first million or so members.
No, I didn't get the letter. I didn't. So I didn't even know that they were being sent. So thanks for sharing me. I feel like I left out.
There you go.
Good. So, but now, Stevie, you have, you know, in your experience in sales, I mean, you know, you're like the E.F. Hutton of sales in regards to, you know, does anyone remember E.F. Hutton?
Yeah, a little bit, vaguely.
All right. All right, so the E.F. Hutton,
I believe it was E.F. Hutton Talks, Everybody Listens, right?
Everybody Listens. Thank you, Chris. I appreciate that.
Yeah, I have a bit of a background in some of the same type of stuff that you do, Steve.
Yep.
I was a sales consultant for a number of years. I also worked in sales leadership with a technology company. So one of the things that I'm able to bring to the table for my clients is I can very quickly pick up on what they're doing. And then when I'm communicating with executives, it's more of a peer-to-peer type of a relationship that I have with them. And the reason why I ended up in recruiting, because this is not something that's a lifelong career of mine. I started doing this about 3 years ago, and that primary reason for it was I had this big network that and people that I could relate to pretty much on a peer-to-peer basis, and I also understood the technology that they were implementing, and that's allowed me, I guess, to access people that a lot of recruiters wouldn't be able to access.
Interesting. So basically leveraging your early adopter of LinkedIn and also the network that you've built over the years to really, and your understanding of technology, how that's, as we heard from Ann, how that's changed over so many years, and how that's, you can help them.
Yeah. Yeah. I was a sales executive for about 18 years with a little company by the name of Lucent Technology, who's now Alcatel, a part of Alcatel Lucent. So I have a technology background.
Good. So now thinking about WinTalker, and I'm going to bring it back to sales somehow. I'm not sure yet, but we'll get there because sometimes I get lost in the show, some of the technologies and the top and topics of conversation and what we hear. So understanding, Steve, what you've heard from WinTalker, you have some questions. What do you think of what you've heard so far?
Well, I mean, it's fascinating to me how they're securing the data specific. I mean, I don't get into the bits and bytes that much, but I have a high level understanding of the complexities. So, I mean, it's just fascinating to me. I'm just interested in hearing, you know, just more about who their customers are, what kind of adoption rates they have. I mean, is this something that's really taking off? I would assume that there's a great deal of interest.
Well, I got a segue here maybe that'll help us make this transition. I want to back up a half a step. And, Steve, if you could take a second and bring our listeners up to speed on really what Sales 2.0 is all about, because people are starting to hear about it. Not everybody quite understands it. And then maybe we can transition back over to Chris and Ann, and you guys can talk about how maybe some of those applications have filtered into your business to work with products like WinTalker.
Yeah, and I'll be perfectly frank with you. There's probably better people to talk about Sales 2.0 than I am. I got involved with it. I read a book about it, but this was kind of early on. And I think a lot of that stuff has evolved, but it's really about a dynamic relationship with your customers. Remembering that success in sales, there's customers out there investigating all the time. I mean, customers, I say enterprises are out there. They're investigating. They're constantly having problems. And it's your messaging getting out there ahead of you. Typically, when you go in and sit down in front of a prospect, that prospect has done a pretty darn good amount of research on you before you even sit down and talk to them. Is that messaging that's getting out to that prospect clear? Is it giving them the right thing? Are they coming in with some preconceived notion about you that you that isn't really effective? So it's a function of aligning the messaging that you're getting out there with your sales organization and making sure that there's some consistency there. If you're not doing that, then the whole marketplace gets confused about what it is, especially in the technology space that you're delivering.
Well, actually, that's interesting because we just recently had to do a reboot of our messaging because part of the issue we were running into is that we were leading with the technology and we were leading with the information security rather than the business benefits of our technology. So what was happening is we were getting rabbit-holed into a technology conversation. So we would, you know, be immediately shuffled off to the CTO or the CIO or their crypto geek, and you know, suddenly it now becomes an escalation of, you know, brain cells between our geeks and their geeks and one-upsmanship, and you know, suddenly we're sucked into a hole where we can never get out of and go have the business message and the business conversation. So we actually really start and look at this, and we've actually now kind of moved our technology, even though I gave you an overview of it, we've kind of moved the technology into a magic black box. And we say, okay, we have this magic black box technology that allows you to do this, 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 and this, which benefits your business, and this is how it benefits your business.
A sale can only happen if the customer has a problem or a need that our product or service fixes, or it's a way to create value for the firm. Without that, you don't get a sale.
Agreed. I think it's the problem, so that I'll, just to rephrase it, I think it's brilliant. There has to be a need, or you have to create value.
Right. Either or. You know, solve a problem, there's a need that's not filled, or we're going to create value for the firm. Conversely speaking, I think a very good sales executive also understands what's the value we bring. Because what you have to do is understand the value you bring to appropriately price a product, particularly a new product in the marketplace or a new application in the marketplace. And, you know, that's the role of a really good salesperson.
And I might even bring it one step further on that, because I think I see where you might be going, Steve. But one step farther on that one is bringing value to the firm, how my solution can, but you have to understand how your buying influence, the person buying, your buyer, defines value and how your solution is going to impact their, their business. And I think I go back to, Chris, as you were saying, is that, you know, you in sales, we're working with against a preconceived idea, particularly around technology. And I think of WindTalker and the solution that you described, as I understand it, is it's an education. We have to educate the marketplace around who and what we do. When you think about SAIT, we kind of had some preconceived ideas of what you do, your service, your back office, and you're going to operationalize effectiveness and excellence in supporting your customers' customers, if I'm in a nutshell.
Exactly, but because technology changes so quickly, the area that we're rapidly moving into and actually being pulled into is how do we get small and medium-sized businesses into the cloud to more effectively, efficiently, and cost-effectively use the technology that's there today.
Okay, so then, because I see some threats to that, and but I didn't. I cut you short, Steve. So I don't.
I was just gonna add some things to what I was hearing Ann say about having salespeople can effectively communicate that story. From my perspective, in a complex selling environment where you're selling solutions to customers, your salespeople have to be consultants. So the first thing they have to be able to do is be able to talk to a client and truly understand and get from that client what their real problems are. So it's a combination of starting at the top and doing a root cause analysis and finding exactly what they...
But sometimes the client doesn't know what the real problem is.
Absolutely.
So, you know, what you have to do is be open to opportunity. Within SAIT, what we find frequently is we'll go into a client that has a quote-unquote particular need for a service or a product. And once we get in there and speak with the client and just evaluate what their current state is, because of our 20 years of expertise, we can see a future state that is much more efficient and effective for the client. If you take new technology like we're talking about here with WindTalker, I mean, this is total white space.
Mm-hmm.
And you can just imagine, we just spoke a little bit about the opportunity with WindTalker, and that's just scratching the surface. So, you know, there is so much opportunity for creative salespeople, and sales today isn't just about, here's the product, here's the price. It's not order takers. You know, the world is too complex. It's not transaction book selling.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, there is just so much a very creative, innovative, assertive person can do in this field. It's wide open.
Well, and Steve, going back to your point that you were talking about there with finding out what the client needs, and the biggest issue there that a lot of salespeople don't have is they don't know when to stop talking and listen.
Absolutely.
You know, and listen to your client, understand your client before you speak. And by doing that, you'll know exactly what you should be saying, what parts of your solutions you should be selling to them, what they're interested in, as opposed to just selling what's in your, you know, hey, this is the script I'm on, I'm going to sell the script.
Right. It's effectively understanding what the customer's needs are and then attaching your solution to those needs. If you can't bridge that gap and attach your solution to their needs, then they don't clearly understand. You haven't done a good job of effectively positioning your product with them to make them, to allow them to buy it.
Yeah, and your word consultant is a good one, because very good sales consultants will understand the client's business and can actually see opportunity and ways to create value for the client.
Absolutely.
Interesting.
What about the step before that, guys? And Steve, you may have some good insight on this, which, you know, let's say you got one of these creative salespeople and they know how to really tell the tale and give the value and understand the client, and let's say they even know when to shut up and listen. But how do they get in front of the client to begin with? With clients so inundated with other opportunities, running their own business and everything coming at them, how do you get your salespeople to market? How do they get in front of these guys to have that conversation?
Well, I think we probably all have different answers to that. And since, you know, I'm the first one to the mic here, I'll speak first. I really believe that in many times you can't just directly go to the client that you want to get to, because sometimes you may think that's the right person to go to or the right firm to go to, and it may not. So how to get there is Rolodex, networking, meeting people, and how many of us have actually experienced the 6 degrees of separation? You know, so I think it's just being open and active and meeting people, listening, and, you know, seeing where the opportunity is. And the opportunity may or may not be where you think it's going to end up.
Yeah, and that's opened up too, right? Didn't they revise that number? Isn't it now like 4.2 something degrees or whatever? They say we're even closer than ever.
Right.
I might be related to Kevin Bacon.
I think he's in my network.
Okay. All right. I have one for you guys. I have one that you may not know, so it's kind of off the topic, but it's right there. I recently was in London, England, and I was visiting the Spencer Church, which is the church of the Spencer line, which, of course, is Princess Diana's family. Mm-hmm. And in the church, I was with the caretaker of the church, and he says, I want to show you a tomb. Well, there's lots of tombs to see in London. But I said, okay, I walk back, and on this tombstone is written, here lies the great, great, great grandfather of George Washington. So George Washington was related to the Spencers.
Wow.
So, you know, that's kind of off there. So, I mean, who would have thought that, right?
No, I'm trying to think about the degrees of separation between Princess Diana and George Washington now, but that's probably a statistical, mathematical issue I'm working on in my brain.
Well, maybe your 4.2 is right or wrong, right?
Yeah, who knows? I might have thrown it right into the you know.
Whatever. But let's get back to the topic of sales. So I gave my point of view, and it's basically you have to be active, you have to have a positive attitude, you have to meet people, you have to understand your business and want to know other people's business and, you know, where their opportunity is. So that's my answer. But I'm sure Steve has got a much closer answer than I just provided.
Well, you know, I mean, sales is a, there's an awful lot of routine stuff that goes on in sales. A lot of things that excite salespeople in general and a lot of things about it that don't. The really successful people, the people that do the things that aren't really that exciting, but they do it over and over and over again until mm-hmm. they get good at it. You know, I mean, most good salespeople just dread cold calling. But yet, you know, most people, at least when they're young, early on in their careers, you've got to do that. And it's the repetitive nature. So eventually, a lot of that stuff gets easy for people because they do it frequently enough. And one of the things that I'd always counsel people to do along the way is, you know, take the list of activities you have to do today and take the hardest ones first. Because then, you know, later in the day, you know, your day, it's all downhill from there. So just scratch off the hard ones. Get them out of the way right up front.
So prospecting early in the morning.
Prospecting early in the morning. Well, that's exactly right.
And I think you said it, and it was, you have to get good at it. Prospecting, networking, because it's still, but I think even what I see is prospecting is still a core practice. And we have a saying that if you find somebody that says they really love to cold call, they're either lying or they're crazy.
Hire them.
Or they're lying. You have to carefully get the background check. So I think there's some insight. So it's basically, so what I'm hearing is that prospecting is the way to get
in
that door.
It's the fundamentals. I mean,
the fundamentals.
Yeah.
Good. Chris, what do you think?
Well, I think actually some of it is pick your target and know what your targets you should be going after. Right? You know, before we got on air, we were talking about it, the shiny logo syndrome, right? Where, you know, that salesman always wants to go after the Coca-Cola, the Home Depot, and everybody's going after them. So the competition is extremely high, but yet there's other organizations that in the small and medium-sized businesses that if you get their business, they're very profitable, they're highly loyal, and you can expand yourself into those businesses and grow with those businesses. So it's mm-hmm. understanding the marketplace and understanding where you can make an impact and where you can be successful as opposed to, you know, just being one of the crowd chasing one of those shiny logos.
Yeah, and I agree with Chris, because if you pick your target in that area, if there's opportunity for you, the time to a close and the time to a decision is much quicker because the bureaucracy is much less. You'll be able to get to the decision maker. You'll be able to get to the C-suite a lot quicker than if you focus on the shiny objects.
Yeah, and make sure it's in alignment with what you want to be doing.
Right.
Or who has an opportunity, you know, consultatively, you're prospecting into the right logos and not just the ones that you think are going to be the most exciting to go after.
Because what I say, I encourage risk-taking. But if you take a risk and it's not working, fail fast.
Good.
If you're going down the path of a smaller organization, you're going to find out sooner rather than later that if it's a qualified lead.
Yep.
Versus a big organization, you may be going round and around and around and around for months before you find out that there really is no opportunity.
I like that, but I like that. Lose fast, as opposed to, there's nothing worse than losing a deal very slowly and letting it die.
Worst place to come in is second.
Yeah.
Because you spent a whole lot of time and effort to get there,
and
you got
worse,
nothing out of it.
Especially if you're coming in second after a very, very long sales cycle, right? That's good.
How about the company in this aspect? I mean, we hear about the salespeople, right? Don't chase the shiny logos, know your targets, things like that. How does the company, and maybe you guys can share your own experiences, but how does the company support the sales team to help front run some of that, help keep them from just being out there independently on their own making bad decisions, but helping them focus so that the marketing, the message, the branding, everything comes together and everybody in the organization is working towards the sale?
Well, I think it's education. It's understanding that your salespeople understanding exactly what the capabilities of the organization are and what the organization can do. But it's also the organization itself understanding itself. You know, I've been with organizations that, and when I first came to SIIT had a little bit of this as well, is they were everything to everybody. And we can't be everything mm-hmm. to everybody. So what we've done over the last, you know, 6 to 7 months now is really focused in on what are those 10 things we do really well and can then sell into the organization and expand those things. So our touch services are those, the infrastructure as a service is some of those, and our software as a service are some of those things that we are doing extremely well. They're easy to understand, and that we can then project them into an organization and then sell additional services once we've projected one of those things into a client. So I think it, from an operational standpoint, you're asking how they can help the salesperson. Is it's for the operational organization to have an identity and know what its identity is so that it can clearly communicate that identity to the salespeople so they can then communicate it to the clients.
Yeah, for me as an executive in the company that we're talking about here, SAIT or even WindTalker, it's making sure that the salespeople are in touch with reality. And a colleague of ours by the name of George basically succinctly puts it, and he says, always think about BART when you're dealing with a potential opportunity. Is the budget there to pay for the opportunity that you're trying to deliver? Are you dealing with the person that is going to approve the sale? Do you have the right product, the right solution for the customer, the right service? And is time of the essence? In other words, is a decision going to be made within 30, 60, or 90 days? And mm-hmm. what I basically find, salespeople, fortunately, most of them are very positive and optimistic. You know, they're going to close $20 million this week. But, you know, there's a real balance here between optimism and reality and help steering them into the products that we know can serve the customer at the same point in time. You know, don't think that you've got a 50 million pipeline if reality only 10 million of it fit the BART questions.
So keeping them balanced, keeping them in
perspective. Yeah, and I think that's the role of the executive. I mean, it's not being a wet dish rag and throwing, you know, water on it and trying to be negative, but it's staying in touch with reality and keep them focused.
And keeping it balanced, too, because you want them to stay optimistic and motivated
yes.
at the same time.
But but at the end of the day, I'm the one that has to deliver the return to the shareholders. So I have to be sure that the whole organization, as Chris points out, understands the strategy, understands the products, and is all focused on the right target to deliver not only value to our customers, but to deliver returns to our shareholders.
Good. Good. Steve, thoughts?
Well, I mean, we talked about messaging. That was where the question really came up. As an executive recruiter, I've got the only product that can refuse to be sold, best I can tell, because I'm trying to place people, right?
So it's like a two-level sell. You have to sell your clients and then the person you're going to place.
Yeah, it's much harder to sell the person, those prospects, those candidates. I'm always working with my clients on messaging. Why, you know, what's the compelling reason why someone would want to come to work for you? You know, what is it about this job? What is it about this company? What are the compelling reasons? And just developing a message around that, because when I'm talking to new prospects and new candidates along the way, I need to be able to tell them what it is about this opportunity that ought to be attractive to them.
Interesting. So it's a lot. Do you find your clients that are asking you to do some recruiting for, that they have a preconceived, well, everyone would want to come work for us. Is that something you run into?
You know, no, not always that. You know, because if that were the case, they really don't need me. You know, if they're out there, you know, and people are flocking to their doors, the right people are flocking to the doors, they probably don't need me. You know, the reality is, though, that there are probably people flocking to their doors, but being able to sort through them, and, you know, in this market, it can be very, very difficult to be able to sort through them. But not only that, the people that they really want to reach are very difficult to get to.
Interesting. Good. So because what I was hearing was around preconceived ideas of what we are represented as a company, in your case, right?
Yeah.
So why people would want to come work for us. You have to help them message that. And I think also in the case of technology, they have a preconceived idea around what the technology is. I think about what SAIT does. And we're greenfield or white space with WindTalker. But I'm wondering, or CoreGuard, rather, in the WindTalker solution, I'm thinking of, you go into a situation, you have a customer, have you ever been in a situation where the customer has a preconceived idea of what your solution is? And how do you overcome that?
Well, actually, that happens a lot with WindTalker. So, you know, you're a DRM system, a digital rights management system, or you're just an encryption system. Well, there's 1,000 encryption systems out there. So because it is such a different idea, trying to message it past that is a problem. And when I talked about us doing a reboot on our messaging, that's what we were trying to get away from, is we were trying to say, it really doesn't matter about the technology. It matters what the technology allows you to do, how it allows you to share information better across your organization, how it allows you to utilize, you know, the cloud mobility without having to worry about your information leaking. So that's more of where we've gone with the messaging, as opposed to, hey, we got the greatest information security system ever built.
So it's about educating and expanding the awareness or their perception of what you're capable
of doing. But it's also, now we're getting more into the need of the organizations as opposed to information security. So, for example, right now, the need of most organizations is they want to use the cloud. They want to use the mobility. They want to use tablets. They want to get information to their employees out on the edge of the network. Well, it's tough to do that right now with the present information security paradigm. So with WindTalker, we knock that paradigm down. But you don't want to talk to them about it that way. What the need is I want to use my iPhone. I want to use my iPad. And I don't want to have to worry about my information leaking. So addressing that issue, as opposed to trying to say, hey, we're an information security system, is really where we've really started focusing our marketing.
Expanding that awareness.
Yeah.
Good. And any thoughts regarding SAIT in that regard?
Yeah, I just had a bolt on to what Chris was saying, because the other thing is, if you're bringing in a solution which is technically advanced like WindTalker, that's all really nice, but it has to be easy to use. Because I can recall a board that I'm on, a public board of a major Fortune 50 company. The directors on that board, we have applications that we can get into the internet, but we constantly had to change passwords, and it was inconvenient, and people would forget passwords. So when you're thinking of technology or selling something, anything particularly in this space, it has to be friendly and easy to use as well.
Good.
You know, and I think when we go back to our experience with WindTalker, going in with, wow, this is really exciting, geeky technology, people right away think, oh, this is really nice, but too hard, too complex, too much time. So regardless of what it is that we're positioning for a sale or a service, it has to be user-friendly on the side of the client.
And easy to use, easy to implement, and it changes that paradigm from that perspective.
Right. Well, for SAIT, to answer directly the question that you asked me, is typically what we find there is we have so much more capability than a client may know that we have. So we basically will go in with a particular service that they've requested, and we see a lot of opportunity to provide services. Conversely speaking, we see from the client that they have paid for a lot of technology that they're not using. So either way, there's opportunity, and that's where it's really important to have the sales consultant that can identify and really knows our offerings and capability, as well as be open to understand, you know, what's the client's business and how we can help them solve problems or create value and make money.
Use the technology to help them. So you have to understand their business, really, to be a consultant to their business, and how my solution SAIT solution can help you accomplish more of what you want to accomplish. Good.
And getting back to what Ann was saying on that simplicity, you know, I have a theory that I call McDonaldization, right? So, you know, McDonald's is perfect on this, is they've taken, you know, some of the most mundane tasks, but they've made them very simple with technology. So, for example, when you go to McDonald's, you order a number one, right, which is a, you know, Big Mac, large order of fries, and a drink, right? So
you know that a little bit too well.
Yeah, well, so the person at the register just pushes number one, right, and a little light comes on, tells the one guy to make a Big Mac, tells another guy to get a large order of fries, and, you know, tells somebody to, you know, pour a Coke. If you really want to mess somebody up at McDonald's, give them exact change. Because the system does not anticipate exact change, because most people don't pay with exact change. But, you know, most people pay with the next, you know, denomination up. So if it's $6.50, they generally pay with a 10. So the person hits the button that says 10, and it then tells them to change. But utilizing that theory, McDonald's has basically flattened out their skill level for their workforce. So now they have actually opened themselves up so that there is a larger pool of people they can pull from, because the skill level is not needed, is not as high. So that's what we can look to do with SAIT as well, is we can start using technology to help them McDonaldize their processes. So either one, they can flatten out the skill level they need, or more importantly, pay attention to what's important to their business. You know, pay attention to generating more sales and more revenue for their business, and not have to worry about what's going on with my server system, or are my laptops properly being monitored? Are they properly patched? Are they up to date? Mm-hmm. So all those things that, especially in small companies, either takes a lot of their time, or unfortunately they're not paying attention to, and therefore creating vulnerabilities in their organization. Our processes and our managed services basically can help that and simplify their lives, so that they're, you know, again, they're being focused on what's important to their business.
Good. Interesting. McDonald's, a new parlor game here, you know, how to have fun and games over at McDonald's when you're bored. Exact change.
Well, I'm just starting to get hungry here. So far we've talked about Coke, bacon, McDonald's. I'm thinking it's time to go out for a meal.
It's a number one. We're going to go get number one here. All right. Good. Well, I think some really good insights and some good sharing. And Steve, did you have any additional thoughts on
that? Because
as a consultant, I'm thinking people are going to be preconceived ideas of what an executive recruiter does and what you do. So I have to imagine that's a challenge you have to overcome.
Yeah, you know, most of my clients I know and have known for a long time. I mean, I've invested in my network, and I don't spend a whole lot of time out trying to develop new clients, quite frankly. I mean, I've been serving the Atlanta community for quite a number of years. You know, I had a sales role that, you know, took me all over the country on a daily basis almost, and I had no network in Atlanta when I left that job, and I spent a good number of years developing that network so that I don't have to spend a whole lot of time trying to develop, you know, new business opportunities for myself. I have, you know, which is really nice right now.
Mm-hmm. Sure. That's nice. So you've already built that. So
yeah, spent a lot of time on that. Yeah. And a lot of that is just, it is just that it's investing. It's investing in people. It's investing in your network. It's investing in relationships. It's paying it forward. Mm-hmm. I mean, remember that, I think it was a movie, Pay It Forward.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I spent a lot of time doing that. And
paying dividends now.
Well, I mean, you know, and I'm still paying it forward. It's a lot of fun, actually, to be in a position where you can do that. And I get a lot of calls from a lot of people who, you know, for one reason or another, no fault of their own, they're in transition. And I still spend a good deal of my time actually talking to people who you may not be able to do anything for me right now, but they really appreciate the time you spend with them, and if they have an opportunity in the future, they will call me when they need me.
Good. Well, I there's some insights. Building that network, making the investment of people, and the paying it forward, I think is some key kernels that came out of that. It's a kernel of information, Andy, not necessarily food.
So I was thinking corn.
I know you were. So I'm here to just help clarify. So coming back to a couple questions, and I'd like to ask a question of what you would offer as guidance as we wrap up the show. But before I get to that particular question, as leaders, as COOs, CEOs, and as president and CEO of your own firm, if you think about a salesperson, when a salesperson gets to you, well, first off, how would a salesperson get to you, and how would they hold on to your attention? So what, and it ties into the question follow-up I have, what guidance or counsel might you give to a new person entering the world of sales? So the first question is, Chris, you're the CEO of SAIT, the CEO for WinTalker.
You just promoted me
into most.
Got a pay raise. So. Congratulations, Chris.
COO, did I say it right?
Now you did. Yes.
All right. So,
I guess I can go to the beach tomorrow.
That's
right.
I would call Chris from the beach and tell him, "Hey, I'm on vacation." Good. So, COO of SAIT.
Well, I tell you that I'm very busy. So when a salesperson gets to me, they better have something that I need, and they better be short and to the point and explain to me why I need them. Because otherwise, one, you'll never get back to me again. And two, if you waste my time, you're never going to get anywhere either, because I'm just not going to be happy about it. Yeah. So
good.
That's the most important thing. And again, I think it gets back to the whole idea of picking your targets, right? Mm-hmm. Understand if the person you're going after and you're targeting, make sure you understand what it is that they need. Make sure that you have that product in your service offering when you go talk to them.
Good, and how you can help them. Good. Okay. Yeah.
You won't get to me by a cold email because I delete all of them. If you call me on the phone because you've got my number and you pretend to know me, I will hang up on you. Mm-hmm. So the way that I pick products and services is basically relationships and recommendations. Or if it's something specific that I'm looking for, I'll do my own research and investigate, make a decision, and then look for a reputable source.
And before the show, you were saying something which I thought I just wanted to come back to. Is you had mentioned in news, I don't do other people's work. I don't do other people's jobs.
Yeah. Well, I gave you a specific example. A company that I worked for in the past was a very large automotive company, and I had a C-suite executive position there. And, you know, people, I'm sure, spent months trying to figure out how to get 5 minutes with me. They would get with me, and what I would do is, you know, funnel them back to the appropriate level that they should be in touch with. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, I'm not going to do the work of a director or a sales manager. That's their job. You know, if I'm going to do their job, I don't need them.
Because you're expecting them to come up with a recommendation.
I'm expecting the relationship at the right place. So the lessons learned there, I think, for salespeople is you may think that you're going to get an advantage to a sale by relating to a high-level person, where in effect, even if you spend months getting there, you're going to get pushed down to the appropriate level anyway. Because I'm not going to do a salesperson's job or a sales manager's job or a sales director's job. That's their job.
Good. That's why you hired them.
All right.
Absolutely. Good.
Well, the other point, too, to get back, Ann reminded me of this when she said, you know, no cold emails, she doesn't respond to them. The other thing that, and no offense to Stephen here, is don't try and LinkedIn to me just because you want to get in front of me. I'm one of those people with my LinkedIns. I'm very careful about that. I don't just blanket LinkedIn people. Everybody on my LinkedIn, I know. I can pick up the phone. I can call and say, hey, how you doing? Hey, can you give me a hand with this? And can you help me with this? So if those people who just reach out to LinkedIn to me, just to link into me so that, you know, someday down the road, they might think they get an audience with me, that's not going to happen.
There's the ignore button that you push.
Good. Yeah, they ignore it. Yeah. Steve, thoughts? If a salesperson is coming to try and get to your attention, because you're getting a lot of calls, and
yes,
you're doing a pay forward,
yes,
but at the same time,
typically people want to get to me. It's through a recommendation from someone in my network, someone I know, someone I trust. So the type of referral network is very, very important. But I have a lot of people who want to come to me because I've got positions that they're interested in. And, you know, you need to be able to tell the story pretty quick because I see an awful, for example, I mean, the sales tool that people use with me is their resume. You know, I mean, that's the document that I look at. I look at an awful lot of them. And if it's not compelling, then and it needs to be compelling. It needs to hit me right up front. It needs to have the keywords I'm looking for. They need to kind of attach themselves to that position that they want to talk to me about. So
that's a good point. That's probably useful from the audience with you years of experience. What are the top three good things to put on a resume, and what are the top three turnoffs?
Oh man, you know, first of all, I don't want to see what your responsibilities were. I want to see what your accomplishments were. So turn off is, you know, listing a job description on your resume. I don't really care. Nobody cares about your job description. I can see your title. I kind of have a sense for what, you know, you did by looking at your title or how, you know, the type of company you were with. I want to see what you did while you were there. You know, I mean, I achieved a certain, you know, quota year over year. You know, or I helped save the company, you know, so many millions of dollars on this project or that project. I want to see specifically what it is you accomplished. And those are the kind of things that my clients pay attention to also. So, cool. I mean, I tell people that all the time, you know, to redo, reset, you know, I appreciate it, but I know you could probably do this job. But, and not only that, but your LinkedIn profile and your resume better look the same. You know, because the first place somebody's going to go gets a resume is to your LinkedIn profile. And if there's no continuity between the two of them, you know, it's like, it's a big turnoff.
Yeah, interesting. So, again, I think it's about getting into and understanding what's important to them, a referral, and being brief, be bold, and be gone, right? Otherwise, you're, in this case, Chris, you're going to piss him off and he'll never talk to you again. He might even shoot you, but I'm not sure. So I think it's about then having the right words that are going to be compelling and impactful to you. I like that. Good. All right. So the last question, kind of tying in. So you have a new person coming into the world of sales. Leader, actually, he's fresh out of school. She's fresh out of school. What kind of counsel would you give that individual?
Find another profession.
I've been waiting for somebody to offer that advice. We finally got it. There it is.
That one, that's, you're not helping. This is Atlanta Sales Talk Radio, Chris.
Okay, come on.
Come on, work with me.
You know what I would basically, I would say sales can be a really rewarding career, but if you don't have the emotional durability to take rejection, it's not a good place to be. So you have to understand how to hear no and what you do with the no. You know, when to take the no, that it's a no, it's a dead lead, you know, come back in 6 months. And how to pick yourself back up and don't go down a morale spiral.
Mm-hmm. So self-endurance, self-positivity, being able to withstand it. All right, good. And if you did give somebody advice to stay in the world of profession...
Actually, I got some advice early on in my career that it's not necessarily sales-oriented, but it's good advice in the business world. Mm-hmm. One of the gentlemen I worked for was an old grizzled engineer, and he had up on his wall two pictures. He had a picture of the Titanic, and he had a picture of General Longstreet. And one time I was sitting in his office, sitting at his desk, and I said, "You know, why do you have those pictures?" And he said, to remind me. And I said, "Well, what does it remind you of?" He says, "When I think I've got everything nailed, I look up at the Titanic and I review everything again."
Good.
The second thing was, because if you know the story of General Longstreet, at the Battle of Gettysburg, Lee did not take Longstreet's advice because Longstreet was a Georgian and not a Virginian. And Longstreet's advice to Lee was to flank... you know, remove from the, you know, retire from the battlefield, head to Washington, D.C., and when the Union Army gives chase, fight them on the better ground because he did not have the ground. And Lee ignored his advice because he was not a Virginian. Mm-hmm. So his thing was, I look up there and I take everybody's advice and listen to everybody's advice, not necessarily take it, but listens to everybody's advice and give it as much validity as I can, despite what their background is or what I might think of them or about them. So that was those were two things, and though they're not necessarily sales oriented, I've always thought they were good. The good advice from a business perspective.
Yeah, I think both of those hit sales pretty good. Absolutely. There's a lot of people that think they have a great funnel, great pipeline, and all of a sudden it becomes the Titanic, and there's nothing there, and now they're trying to figure out how they're going to eat. And sometimes salespeople, we're the toughest to take good advice too.
Yes, working with a lot of salespeople, sales professionals, it's they got it in the bag. Mm-hmm. Until it's all of a sudden not. Steve?
Well, persistence is always important, but I'm going to move a little bit beyond that. And I think somebody told me one time that it was extraordinarily, your integrity was the one thing that you needed to spend, you needed to value and guard is more than anything else. That as a salesperson, you are going to unintentionally mislead customers, whether you like it or not. People are going to give you the wrong story. You're going to misunderstand things. You will mislead customers, whether you like it or not. You better not compound it by doing it intentionally, because you do it intentionally one time, and every time something, the message is wrong, they're going to think you did it intentionally again. So it's really, really important to guard that integrity. And beyond that, too, is seek out wise counsel. I mean, mentors, things like that, people who have been successful.
General Longstreet.
Yeah, General Longstreet.
Yeah, good. All right. Well, folks, it's been a wonderful show. I appreciate your time, and I appreciate all that wonderful insight. I know our listeners are going to enjoy those particular three different perspectives. Intestinal fortitude to be able to handle, say, no, or having rejection. Persistence and also integrity. And then the Titanic and also General Longstreet. I like those two. All right. Any closing thoughts, Andy?
I just think that if people will just listen to those last couple of things, I mean, there's always a key to our guest and the expertise they provide, and it's great to listen to the show, it's great to hear this stuff, but take it and do something with it. And if people will just take what's been said here today, they can create not only success in sales, but they can have a lot of fun doing it.
I like that. Agreed. Take action. All right. This is Steve Cadley with Atlanta Sales Talk Radio with another phenomenal show. Hopefully we kept up to the standards. And just reminding you that everybody is in sales. Until next time, this is Steve Cadley signing off.